Welcome to Crosstalk, coming to you from South Florida. My name is Irene, and this is a podcast where we share recovery stories and hopes to help someone who either watches this and has a loved one who needs help or needs help themselves. Please like, follow, subscribe, share it. We'd love your comments. You know, if you need help and you don't know what to do, you can always reach out to us, comment, send a message, go to our website, whatever it is, we're here and we want to help. And thank you for subscribing. Okay, I'm here with Katie, who I love so much. Hey, Katie, welcome.
Good morning. I love you too. I love you so much too.
Yay, I'm so happy you're here.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. This is so tremendous. And just the work that you're doing to share people's stories, share your own stories, is just remarkable. So thank you. And it's wonderful to watch your dream come true.
Yeah, thank you. And I know, well, you help people too. I mean, you raise money for Alzheimer's, and I'm not going to tell her story, but, you do so much too in the community, in our community, the recovery community, but as well as other communities that need the help. So I'm so excited you're here, and you're an angel, and I love you. And so, you know, you've seen the podcast, so you know the drill. So let's start with, like, how did it all begin? Where's Katie from?
Oh, tell my us about gosh. Yourself. So Katie is from Bayside, Queens. I grew up right outside New York City in Bayside, in a wonderful home. I have two incredibly supportive and loving parents. I have a younger brother who is, you know, my strength. He's my best friend. And I think my story, really, that is the line through everything, throughout the whole process, is, you know, how much love and support that I had, and how when things got bad. Right. And it really impacted that incredible support that I had from them. But I grew up, you know, very happy childhood, you know, very, you know, upper middle class, normal, you know, we played sports. You know, my brother was a hockey player. I was a swimmer and a figure skater. And it was like my parents coached for us. They were involved in everything that we did. But there was always something about me where I felt I wasn't enough. And that really, I always had this thought that no matter what I did, no matter if I got straight A's, no matter if I never got my name on the board except for once. And my mom actually took me out for ice cream because she wanted me to know that it's okay. No one's perfect. So we're going to reward the fact that you got your name on the board.
Is having your name on the board a bad thing?
It was a terrible thing. That was naughty.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Like, I definitely answered a question without raising my hand. So I got my name on the board. And it was as if, like, I had committed the just worst cardinal sin, you know.
Wow. I was real naughty then.
I went through my entire academic career without getting detention. So that just gives you a little insight as to, as my brother said, like, I was a goody two shoes, you know.
And you totally are a goody two shoes.
Yeah. And I am now again. Yeah. But I think that search for finding what was missing in me led me to alcohol when I was about 14, 15 years old. I made some friends and there were parties and, you know, and that's actually when I started lying, because I'll never forget the first time I went out with some friends and I got drunk and I came home and I was throwing up and my parents were like, "What's wrong? What happened?" And I was like, "Nothing. I was just drinking Diet Coke." And that lie came out of my mouth so easily and continued to do so for the next 30 some odd years before I got sober. It is baffling to me how easily I could lie to the people that I love, to hide my addiction. So high school had, you know, minimal, minimal incidents where I got in trouble, kind of drank too much, you know.
On the weekends mostly?
It was on the weekends mostly.
Okay.
Mostly.
So you weren't like coming home from school? And
no, not yet.
Okay.
not yet.
Okay.
But, you know, we had the sit downs and, you know, I knew that I was disappointing my parents and, you know, their whole thing was, you know, how can we help you? You know, what do you need? And I think that it's a beautiful question, but I had no idea what I needed because I was also battling. I started having anxiety at a very young age where I used to pull my hair out starting in second grade. Mm-hmm. And that led to binge eating, which was also something I did in secret. I did to, you know, hide because I was so desperate to be perfect. I didn't want anyone to know
right. These
things about me that were far from perfect.
I was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I was hiding my binge eating.
Right.
You know, and it's that eating disorder piece or disorder eating, however you want to call it, is so hard because we need food.
Right.
But, you know, using food as a coping mechanism, it's like, where's the line sometimes?
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And it's really hard. Thank God, you know, for my therapist that, you know, helps me every day through the eating stuff because it is real and it is constant and it is something that I need to recover from just like I recover from alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So the anxiety and the depression and the eating really were this, you know, this, as I actually wrote an essay called The Monster Inside Me when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, I wish to this day that I could find it because it really, it talked about what I was really going through and, you know, just this pain. I hated the way I looked. I hated that, you know, everybody else seemed to be doing something better than me.
Right.
You know, I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't thin enough. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't good enough at sports. I was always in my mind,
mm-hmm.
keeping, you know, this was all in my mind. In right. everyone else's mind,
right.
I was, you
perfect.
Know, I was fantastic,
yeah.
right? Like I
yeah.
was so, like everything was great. And my parents were proud of me and, you know, my family loved me. My brother was proud of me. My friends were proud of me, but I couldn't see it.
I totally can relate to that. And I always say, like, I always thought it came so easy to everyone else.
Yes.
And I was like, why isn't it easy for me? Like, why is everyone so thin and I'm not? Meanwhile, I'm binge eating. I
yep.
think that everyone's eating cake every day
yeah.
and they're thin, but it's
right.
like, no, they're not, you know.
They're not.
And it's just like this thinking that isn't real, right? And
yeah.
and we just, where does it come from? I don't know. Because it's like
I don't know.
Great families. There's no
yeah.
real like significant trauma where, I mean, I'm sure there are traumas, but
yes.
there's no significant, you know, event that would say like, this is why I think this way.
Right, right.
So it feels very incongruent to life.
I think that for me, you know, I choose not to speak publicly about my traumas because I think that it's just something that it took me a really long time to heal from.
Mm-hmm.
But there were traumas.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, school was definitely hard for me. I was bullied in school. And that just reinforced this feeling that I had about myself, right? And I remember vividly when I was about 15 years old sitting in my best friend Liz's car, and she said to me, she goes, I don't understand. I just can't, how can I help you? I wish you could see me the way that I see you. You see yourself the way that I see you. And she just kept saying that to me over and over again. Like, if you could only see how other people view you, you wouldn't feel this way. And I would get angry with myself just saying like, why can't I see this? You know, it was like any excuse to really beat myself up, to hurt myself. And I think the more that I look at my life, I used alcohol also as a form of self-harm, because I would drink to excess and to the point where I was ruining my life step by step.
Mm-hmm.
In college, of course, it got worse. You know, I was able to hide it more from my family because I was living at school. But they knew.
Right.
And my friends knew, and they were scared. And there were incidents where, you know, I got in trouble. And It was bad.
What did it look like? You know, were you waking up in the morning and drinking? You know, I know for me in college, I was like coming home in taxi cabs in New York City, and like they wanted to kick me out.
Yeah.
It was so bad. Like they were like, get out of my car. And I was like, just take me home,
just take
home. Just take me home.
Exactly. That is 100% what it looked like. You know, I wasn't drinking during the day unless there was like an excuse for day drinking, but I was like always the one that suggested it.
Saturday pop champagne.
Kicked out of stuff. I was the one where it's like, where's Katie? Oh, there she goes. And, you know, it was really difficult. There were times where, you know, I would vomit all over myself, and, you know, it was not living. But at the time, that's what I used to cope. That's how I thought people liked me, right? Because I was the party girl. So it's like, now I have all these friends, and, you know, now I'm going to all these parties. And, you know, it's not that I never really had a lot of friends growing up, but it wasn't until, you know, the end of high school and beginning of college when I felt like I had made it. Like I was somewhat cool. Not even if I can use that word, I'm aging myself, but.
I use the word cool. I use the word cool all the time.
Yeah.
Is that not a thing anymore?
Yeah. I don't know. I just use, I don't know. We'll look to the ones younger.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, tell us.
I heard some weird words recently, like something like sigma or something. I was like, that sounds weird to me. What are you talking about? It's a Greek letter. You know?
True.
I don't know about all that anyway.
But, you know, college was great. I mean, it was like the tale of two cities with me. It was like the best time of my life, the worst time of my life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started working all this time. I love how I glance over the fact that like I did take a leave from school because my mental health was so bad. Mm-hmm. I had had a really bad panic attack, and I had to be placed in the hospital, 72-hour hold, you know.
Yeah. Well, panic attacks are serious. Like they can feel like a heart attack.
And this one was bad. You know, there was a time where I had to leave school for a little bit and get some help. And then I started into therapy, started, you know, medication and things like that, which helped for a while. Mm-hmm. What I didn't understand was my drinking was really not having the best impact on the strides I was trying to make to better my mental health.
Right. And it probably didn't mix well with the medication.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So then I started working right out of school. I landed a phenomenal job with a golf association that I just loved. I mean, it was so much fun for me. And my parents, avid golfers, my brother, avid golfer, very good golfer, has won a number of titles and things like that. So golf was always big in my family. And I felt that maybe I didn't realize it at the time, but subconsciously it was like, oh, now I can sit with them, right? Because like I was the one that didn't play golf. I was the one that was by the pool. And, you know, I had made up all these things that like they love golf more than me. I mean, the things we tell ourselves,
right?
You know, when we're in this dark, alone place.
And it's like totally the substance that's talking.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
You know, like there's no like clarity, like, like how ridiculous to think. I mean, and not to invalidate or anything like that, but like that your parents would love golf. I know how much your parents love you, by the way.
Exactly.
So, I mean, maybe that's why I feel like I can see that. But, you know, I had those ridiculous thoughts too, where I look back and I'm like, where did that messaging come from?
Where
like,
did that come from?
Such a great imagination.
Yes. So once I started to excel in this position and make a lot of friends and, you know, in my mind, it was like, oh, now my parents and brother will be proud of me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was great. I was doing incredible things. I mean, I was traveling to France. I was traveling to Ireland. I was, you know, planning these high profile golf events. I was meeting incredible people. And it was a great life. And I was drinking my way through it. And
this is in your 20s?
Yeah, my 20s.
Okay.
Yeah, my 20s. So, but again, it was like age appropriate, I guess, in some ways. So like I would always downplay it, but I was right on the edge all the time.
Well, I actually, you know, did this golf event once where I was helping someone. A friend of mine had a golf caddy company, right? Oh. And so she was like, can you caddy? I was like, I know nothing about golf. I was like, but I can drive a golf cart.
There we go.
So I went and caddied, and it was a police chief, like, of New Jersey and Newark, I think. I don't remember, but it was all the police. And there were stands of alcohol at each stop, I guess, yeah. or at each hole.
Yeah.
They knew I knew nothing. They were like, you are the worst caddy in the world. But they gave me PBA cards after, and nice. I was really excited. But when I used them, the cop used that against me. So it wasn't a good thing. But anyway, they were drinking a lot, and they were yeah. telling me, like, this is, like, you know, that's what we do.
It was the culture. You know, so especially during that yeah. time, you know, I think things are changing now because I think society is changing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it was always, you know, everybody was always drinking. And so to have a drink in my hand was not something that was, you know,
uncommon.
Exactly. Exactly. It wasn't looked down upon. It's like, oh, okay, we're all having a drink. In my late 20s, I had another episode, and this one was worse than the last, as they tend to be, mm-hmm. Where I did have to take a leave of absence from work and go into back into the hospital, 72-hour mm-hmm. hold. Mm-hmm. I was a danger to myself and others. Mm-hmm. And
was it from a panic attack?
It was from basically another panic attack, psychosis. You know, hearing
from
voices,
drinking,
I believe it was,
yeah,
you know, pulling my
hair out. I hear that
out.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pulling my hair out, not being able to breathe, you know, attempting to do things to harm myself. Because at that point, despite everything that was going on in my life that was good, I could only focus on the pain and during that time I started, I was self-harming. So, that was something that new that started. And again, I did it in places that people wouldn't see, you know, because I had this mask, I had this image that was me, that was, you mm. know, Katie, or actually I went by Kate. I go by Kate at work because I have an H in my name.
Right.
Which always throws everybody off. So I go by Kate. And so it was almost like, you know, there's this Friends episode where Joey, you know, becomes Joseph, and all of a sudden he's married with two kids, and everyone's like, who's Joseph? Like, you're Joey.
Right.
Right. So in my life, it was like, Kate is this, you know, fantastic event planner, and she's got everything together, and, you know, everything's great. And they're like, who's Kate? Like, where did this persona come from? But it was this person that I created.
Right.
You know, and I remember when I got into the treatment center that we both went to, my family therapist wrote Kate and a big X through it.
Right.
No Kate, no fake Kate.
Yeah.
Because Kate was very fake.
Right.
Kate was very inauthentic.
Right. Right. I mean,
very inauthentic.
It's so funny. They changed. They always hated nicknames there.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. were like, no more nickname.
Nothing. You go by, you know, your name and who you are.
Yeah.
And so I took a break from that episode. And again, I got better, but I never stayed sober. It was like, at that point, no one was really talking about my drinking. It was more of like, or depression,
her
or anxiety. You know, her at that point, you know, I had lap band surgery, so I had lost a ton of weight and then I gained it back. I also gained back, you know, this, I would, at risk of sounding gross, I would vomit. Like when I would eat too much, I would instantly vomit.
Yeah.
Right.
That's and very so, common with that surgery.
Very common.
I had weight loss surgery as well, as some people know, but gastric bypass. Mm-hmm. God, over 24 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, how old am I? Yeah. 20. Wow.
I know. I had mine in 2004.
I had mine in 2004 too.
Oh my gosh. I love
this. Oh my God. I mean, I knew you had it. I didn't know 2004. Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as I graduated college, the June I graduated, I had it. And I can't throw up, so I never was able to.
Oh,
so
wow.
I get sick for like 45 minutes. Not anymore as much, right. But it can happen.
Right.
it can still happen and it's really painful, but I remember the people around me have the same issue. And having that surgery is, I don't know if you know this, but, and I could be wrong, but there's like a lot of research now that shows like post bariatric surgery.
Yes.
There's a lot of addiction, like yes. it, like it inflames almost. It's yes. like this thing called addiction interaction, right?
Yes.
Where it's like you're switching food for, right. for something else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I always think of it as like a pool, right? And you've got like a leak in a pool. And if you patch up that one leak, it's going to sprout out another leak, right? Because the pressure's so great.
Right. You're not.
So it's going to pop out somewhere. Yep. There's going to be a leak. So you got to be really sure mm-hmm. that, you know, you do a thorough investigation oh, yeah. of your, you know, your holes, right?
And well, it's what I've realized too, because I've been 300 pounds, then I dropped down to 100 something yeah, pounds right. where I was emaciated during my addiction. And then after getting sober, I gained 90 pounds and I was over 200 pounds again. And now I'm at a regular weight that I'm happy with. But what I've realized through all of that weight loss and weight gain is that it's a freaking inside job.
It is.
That I've been miserable thin. I've been miserable big. Yes. I've been happy big. I've been happy thin.
Yes.
And it's the weight, the outside has nothing to do with
nothing
it.
Nothing to do with
but
it.
But you don't get that
no.
when you're where you want, when no. you're not where you want to be right. on the outside.
Yeah.
That feels like that's the answer.
Right.
And it's like so far from the answer.
So far from the answer. Ugh,
and it's so frustrating. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? All I wanted was to be thin. And then right. I get thin and I'm like, not happy.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Look what I've done to get here.
Right.
Right.
And like everyone's like, so oh, you hard. Look so good. You look so good. And you're like, I feel not good.
I feel terrible.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. It is crazy. And, you know, and it was like throughout all of this, I have just that constant, that negative self-talk just kept getting louder and louder mm. and louder. And
I can
kept
so relate
drinking
to that.
More. And it was like everything that was happening was like, oh, I'm going to drink because I'm happy. I'm going to drink because I'm sad. I'm going to drink. So in my 30s is really when the drinking got bad. I was really suffering with, I had now become bulimic because the vomiting after meal, you know, it was like, the band introduced me to bulimia, right? And it was like, oh, wait, like I can do this, mm-hmm. right? I can, you know, I can purge after meals. And then that's another way that I can, you know, again, almost as another form of self-harm, right? Because yeah. I was very violent, beating myself up for eating, binging, and then it got into restricting as well. Mm-hmm. So, I was a mess. I was keeping it together, but barely. And then my cutting myself harm, really amped up again and people started noticing. And then I went and, you know, was forced, to get help. By both my family and my boss at the time. And they said, you know, this is bad. You need to get help.
Right.
And it was more for the mental health, not necessarily the drinking.
Well, I mean, the reason why we drink is
right.
the mental health.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, you know, what it always starts before a drink.
Right. And no. I don't think anybody, including and especially myself,
yeah.
was ready to say I'm an alcoholic. Like, I was just not ready to say that. Like, yes, I like drinking. Yes, you know, I like a good time. But I'm not an alcoholic by any stretch. Like, that was my lie, right? Even right. though I'm pretty sure I knew at that point that there was something different about me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what caused all of that, you know, maybe that's the common denominator in all of this, right?
Right?
So I ended up getting some outpatient help, and it worked for a little while, but now my drinking had gotten to the point where I was drinking in front of my therapist, like in in the treatment program, I would go and would have a bottle of water that was vodka.
And did the therapist know?
Not until the end. And I was so angry and bitter. And I probably am realizing this, that I owe this woman an amends now that I really think about it. I haven't thought about this literally since it happened. Was I drank in front of her and she was basically kicking me out of the program. Like, you know, she had said I had been drinking and she was kicking me out of the program.
Right.
And was forcing me to do a breathalyzer because mm-hmm. she wasn't going to let me drive home. And she said something to me and I said, oh yeah, you think you're such, because she used to talk about how she's been in drug and alcohol treatment for, you know, for 30 years and all this stuff. And I threw it back in her face and I said, oh yeah, you think you're such a good drug and alcohol therapist. I've been drinking in front of your face for the past 4 weeks and you haven't noticed. I mean, where did that come from?
Right.
Who is that person? Who said that?
That is not you.
That is not
Katie, I know.
Me.
That
is
not me. That's the alcohol.
I was so angry and I was so bitter and I was in so much pain that I was lashing out at people. And then, you know, it affected my career. I parted ways with... the job that I loved so much because it was time and I felt like I had lost everything.
Yeah.
Because my career was my identity in a lot of ways.
I mean, I still feel that we do associate ourselves with our career. It's what we do every day.
And it was how I had friends and it was what everything I did, yeah. You know, it was such a huge part of my life. So then, I had another incident, where I ended up in the hospital this time for alcohol. And it was not pretty. And so the next day I decided I was going to go into treatment and I found myself a treatment center in Connecticut and mm-hmm. it was beautiful and it was wonderful. And they diagnosed me and said, okay, we're going to put you in the eating disorder house. And I was like, okay. They were like, but you're also going to, you know, go to AA meetings and do the alcohol abuse
right.
portion of it as well. So it was like dual diagnosis.
Right. And you learn that it's really all the same.
It's
thing.
All concurrent. You yeah. know what I mean? Like yeah. it's just, so I did that and I learned a lot of great skills, but I was doing damage to myself for so many years that it just scratched the surface for me.
Right.
It was very helpful. I think I was 90 days sober before I started drinking again.
And was this treatment program, how long was it?
I was there for 7 weeks. I extended myself. So, I mean, like it was great. It was great. I mean, and I loved my therapist was so great. Like I loved her. She was amazing. I got a lot of help. I started some trauma work there that, you know, was good, but then.
When you don't finish that work
yikes.
It like brings everything back.
Yeah, and it sure did. And in no time, I was drinking every day, all day. I had started that before I ended up going to treatment. I was drinking every day, all day.
And this is in your late 30s.
My late 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I lived by myself. So I lived in this dungeon. It was a garden apartment, so it was dark. I lived in this dungeon of handles of Tito's. Like,
where is this? Where are you living?
I was living in Rye, New York at that time.
Oh, Rye. Right. So
I love Rye. Yeah. I loved it there. I really did.
Not the apartment. And it's so funny because... we keep ourselves in these dark spaces, at least I did too. Mm-hmm. And if we weren't drinking so much, we'd be like in a nice apartment,
yeah, right.
saving money,
right.
probably spending our money on different things. And
right.
it's like instead everything is going into alcohol.
Everything was going into alcohol.
Or whatever your drug of choice
is. Now my relationships with my friends are strained. Now relationships with my family is strained. I was showing up drunk places. I was interacting with my godchildren and my nephews drunk.
Yeah.
You know,
can I pause for a sec?
No, I'm good. Okay. I mean, this is part of This is part this of the journey, someone, you know,
too. I mean, like, this is yeah, the point
that's to- why I see this. And, you know, and it breaks my heart to know that that person was so selfish and so consumed by this disease that not even the most important people in my life made a difference. Like, it didn't matter to me. It just what mattered to me was the alcohol.
And I just want to be clear, because some people might look at this as like, we're blaming alcohol, like we're like saying, oh, well, it wasn't me, it was the alcohol. But no, I mean, we did a lot of work to get to where we are.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not, and we know that was our actions.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, definitely. Right.
But that's not who we are.
Right.
And now, you know, it's, I always tell people, I'm like, you can choose to change and be a different person.
Yes.
If you choose to put down the drink.
Exactly.
And those things you did don't define you.
No.
Right? They're in the past. Like that could be a memory.
Right.
And it is, right? It, like,
yeah. And it's like, you know, as we say, like, you know, we don't choose to shut the door on our past, you know,
right.
You know,
because we got to remember that's what we did. Right. So we never go back.
Exactly. Right. And I think that, you know, in the program that I am in, you know, you take accountability for your actions and you take a look at your life and the choices that you make. I know that it was me that made those choices.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that it was me and, you know, you make amends to those that you need to. And there were many for me because I hurt a lot of people.
Right.
And I know that I hurt the people that I love the most.
Right. It was you and
you
were inebriated.
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah.
And
oh yeah.
And, you were, right. And, that, and you know, this is the reasoning. And you know, I can't even imagine that, Katie.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you hear that a lot.
I do.
Because I hear that. They're like, you were an addict. I can't even imagine.
Right.
You have it so together.
Right.
Like, well, you know, there are days I don't have it together.
Good
I
days, mean, bad days. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's life.
That's life.
For everyone.
Exactly.
Sober, not sober.
Right.
You
right.
know? People are like, well, how are you? I know it's a struggle. I'm like, yeah, but it's a struggle all around.
All around. You know? Everybody's struggling in their own way.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the only way that I keep my sobriety is to give it away. And so I think talking about these things and, you know, and letting people know that me, the person that you see sitting here before you, that's, you know, 2 3/4 of a year sober, right? Like, it takes a lot of work, but it's through, you know, my higher power and my support system, my friends. I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to tell this story because, you know, I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but you were the first person I met.
I
like,
never forget
in recovery.
When we met you.
Yeah.
I met in, you. I was in, like, are you Katie?
And I was like, who is this woman and how, why does she have donuts? And like, I think I love her. And you were like, you were starting the AA meeting. And I was like, I just immediately, I had never met you before, but I felt at home and I felt a certain peace. And I think that that is something that's so magical about our community. And we've become, you know, very close friends. You know, you are in my personal board of directors, as I like to call it.
Yes, exactly. And you are in mine. And I'm so happy you're here because I want you to continue with the story. And because
it gets good.
It gets good. But, you know, I love this and what we're doing here because it helps. You know, if it wasn't for these stories for me and if it wasn't for hearing other people that, okay, I'm not the only one that blew up my world,
yes.
right? And
yes.
I'm not the only one. And if they can get better, then maybe I can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And
yes.
that's the truth.
That's it. That's it. Maybe someone hears this and is like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Like, oh, I did that too. Oh, okay. And she's okay, you know,
yeah.
and she's.
It doesn't define you.
It doesn't define me.
Yeah.
It doesn't define me.
Your worst moments don't define you. Actions don't, you know,
right.
In the end of the day, you have to,
yeah,
just move past it.
Move past
it. Do better.
Do better.
Yeah.
When you know better, you do better.
So tell me now, you're in your late 30s. You're, you know, kind of drunk around family,
yep.
around little ones. Not a good look. You're not happy about that.
Nope.
But you keep going.
I keep going, and I really didn't, you know, at this point I was in a dark, dark place where mm-hmm. I just kept thinking mm-hmm. to myself, no one's ever going to love me. This is it. Like, what do I have to show for my life? And then my parents had always planned to move to Florida when they retired to play golf and enjoy their life.
Right.
So they had they sold our home in Queens, and I think the most telling reaction was, "What are we gonna? How are we gonna tell Katie?
Right.
Like, how are we gonna do this? Like, she's not gonna be okay." And I was okay, and until I wasn't. And then I was resentful, and I felt abandoned, and I just drank more and more and more and more.
Right. And you're still in Rye in this dungeon apartment.
Still in Rye, you know, but again, going back to that mask is when I would be with my family, you know, I did not let them know that I was, you know.
Had they ever seen your apartment?
Oh, they'd see my apartment. They didn't love it, you know.
Right.
I mean, I made it homey for me, but like. Right. They did not like it, knowing me and knowing my personality and knowing how I like to hide. They were like, this is not good.
Right.
But
there's nothing they can do at that point.
Right. Like, I was paying my own rent and, you know, I was doing all the things. So, and then I'll never forget. I have a conversation with my brother, who just like put, he has put up a lot with me. And one of it was another one of my drunken phone calls where I called him crying and, you know, and he said, well, why don't you move to Florida? And he was like, Katie, I see you moving to Florida in 2023. He was like, living in Florida, finding a church, being happy. And I got so mad at him and I was screaming. I'm like, oh, I can't believe you would say I'm not moving to Florida. Like, right. I was so angry.
Right.
Right. So angry. Like, Florida's like, how the worst dare place you?
In the world.
Yeah. Like, how dare you?
Right.
So, you know, my parents were moving down and I ended up flying down to help them with the house, and I loved the house and I loved where they lived. And I was like, this is actually not so bad. But I was also like sneaking alcohol, into the house when they, you know, weren't looking. I was buying White Claws from Target, you know, and just like, again, just like total alcoholic behavior, mm-hmm. you know? Because they had, at that point, they knew better than to have alcohol around the house because I was going to steal it.
Right.
I got a phone call at midnight, of Labor Day weekend, that from my best friend that lived next door to me. And she said, Katie, it's all gone. And I was like, what's all gone? And she's like, our home. And I was like, what? She's like, it's all gone. It's gone. The flood. It's gone. And I couldn't imagine what was going on. And then, you know, I turned on the news and I saw that Hurricane Ida hit New York. Erin had told me the story, how she had to climb out from the cabinets to make it out of the apartment, because again, it was a garden apartment. So it was low to the ground. Right. And so when the water started rising,
living with you.
We shared a wall. We were separate apartments, right. But she lived right next door. And so she had gotten out, and obviously I was in Florida. So that was the first time God saved me.
Right.
Because I know in my heart that if I would have been there, I would have been inebriated and I probably would have taken sleeping pills or something to try to sleep. And I probably wouldn't have been able to wake up.
Yeah.
So
you would have died.
I would have died. I would have drowned.
Yeah.
Because from what I hear, it was fast and furious. So the water level had gone up pretty much to the top of the apartment. So everything was gone. Pretty much nothing was salvageable, you know, my furniture, my clothes, my bags, my shoes, my jewelry, like, right. You know, and there were these things that like, you know, that are irreplaceable, you know, like just memories of my life that, you know, I'll never find again, things from my grandmother. It took me a long time to heal from that.
Yeah, I remember that was a tough
that
one.
Was a big one.
Yeah.
And
there was like nothing anyone could say. We it was were like, ooh.
Yeah, that's rough. It was rough. Yeah. It was not good. So I flew back home, and, you know, licensed to get shit faced, basically.
Right.
So I was like,
Were you in a hotel? What'd you do?
I ended up staying with my best friend, Sarah, and her, and my godchildren, her husband, Eddie, who or the second part of saving my life, because I drank myself
into
pretty much
oblivion.
Yeah. To death,
as they say,
because of my eating disorder, because of my restricting, binging, drinking, my body had shut down. So Sarah took me to the hospital, and they basically told my family, told Sarah that they didn't think I was going to make it through the night. Yeah.
Wow. So was this the culminating event that brought you down Florida?
Sure did.
Yeah.
I woke up, there was a woman on my bed, and I'm like, who are you? I'm like, hello. Like, stranger. So I'm like, okay, hey, stranger. Like, you know, what is going on? I see Sarah on the phone, and unbeknownst to me, I find out later that Sarah, my brother, my sister-in-law, Gabby, my parents, you know, it was like they all just rallied together to save my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, my sister-in-law has so many resources and contacts in that field. So she just got on the phone and just found where we went.
Yeah. And you're like me, you went straight to Florida, right?
Yeah, I went straight to Florida.
You bypassed the Magic Mountain in Pennsylvania.
I did, yeah. Okay. I was going right to the place.
Where they send the worst ones.
Exactly.
They're like, you bypass, you know, everything. Right. You just go to like...
Do not pass go.
Yeah, you're like dying.
Right, like this is bad.
Yeah.
And I think they told my family that it was like, when nothing else works, you go here, right?
So
and I don't know if I can say, you know, the name of the place.
Yeah,
we
say Karen all
okay,
time.
Okay, so I went to Karen.
I need to be getting paid, by the way, by Karen. Hello. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
We're available for sponsorship.
Yeah. So they get the most press from this podcast. Literally, I think that they've heard Karen many times.
Yeah. Okay.
It's one of those places where, you know, Renaissance, that program specifically is like the end of the road solution.
Yes.
For families, and you know, it works.
It sure does. And I think the component that was most attractive to my family was the family work,
right?
You know, and having a family therapist.
So
Dr. John, I love him so much. I text him all the time. I sent him
Campo.
No. Netherman.
Oh, I don't know him.
Yeah.
Oh yes. God. No, I know him. Yeah. Of course I do. What am I saying? He's still there.
Yeah, he's still there.
Yeah.
But I text him and, you know.
I didn't know he was a doctor.
Yeah. Dr. John.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh. Shout out. Hi, Dr. John. but we call him Dr. John because my brother's name is John.
Okay.
So whenever we would talk about something, I would prep it by Dr. John said or John said.
Right.
Or, you know.
Right. So I want to get into now, like, what does you go to this treatment center? They save your life. You do tons of family work. Tons of trauma work, tons of, you know, working on all these little pieces that you've been. And what does this look like? What does early recovery look like? Mm. And what does recovery look like now, you know?
I just want to say, for the record, I was inpatient for 5 months at Karen. And then I was outpatient for a while.
Why were you impatient for 5 months?
Because I needed it.
Were you obstinate in the beginning like me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I was like.
Were you like, I know better than you?
Yeah. Well, and it was funny because they were like, Katie, like, you're not as smart as you think you are.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
What? Yeah. I was like, I'm the smartest person in the room. Oh my gosh. I was so arrogant. I was so, you know, I've been down this road before. Like, I know more than you. Like, you don't know about me. Let me tell you about me.
Right. Right? They haven't seen us a million times. Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Like, you know, okay.
So I always say when I graduated.
Yeah.
Right. When I graduated from Karen, life really began for me. And I started a new job and I ended up, I lived at Karen, instead of going to halfway, I lived there, which was really great. Cause that helped me with my like fear of, my trauma surrounding home.
You know, I wish that was an option for me.
I can't believe that it was an option for me because I'm abundantly grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so I lived there and like, I had the job and I was, you know, I was starting my life over. I was making friends and a lot of my friends happened to be the people I went to treatment with, the sober supports, right, that came. You know, that's how I met my closest friends.
And it was tail end of COVID?
It was tail end of COVID. So yeah. So 2022.
That's such a monumental thing. We always like time everything now. Like, it's crazy. That pre-COVID?
Right.
Post-COVID.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And it was just, it just started and I started to, you know, real life. So I was able to just rebuild my life with the foundation that I was taught by my therapists and by my sponsor. Mm-hmm. And you know,
did they encourage you to do like 12 step stuff?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. And again, I was one of those people. My mom would say like, oh my gosh, I've never heard anyone badmouth AA the way you did, because I was like, I just had such a narrow-minded mm-hmm. view of what it was.
Yeah. A lot of people don't.
I was like, oh no, I go in the rooms and I don't see anybody that looks like me.
Right. You're right.
I was in, you know, maybe I was going to the wrong meetings. That's all. You know,
there's tons of us and we look like, I mean, there's no look.
We look like anybody and everybody,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I found a home group. I'm obsessed with my home group. I am like, it to me is,
that was my favorite meeting.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And it just really, it brings me so close to women. I mostly go to all women's meetings, which, you know, if you knew me in my past life, I was always around men. I was never around women. Mm-hmm. I had my few, you know, my couple really close friends, and then the rest of it were the guys, Kate and the guys.
Yeah.
So
fake
leaning,
Kate.
Yeah, fake Kate, leaning into women, was my saving grace, and being able to find my faith. I think that I did church alcoholically. When I was in New York, like I was on the board, I was in the choir, I was on the altar guild. Like I did everything on paper, what it was like to be the perfect Christian, right?
Right.
The mask.
And just to be clear, like everyone finds their own type of faith.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, cause there's like this misconception that 12 step meetings and AA specifically like leads you to religion.
No.
And I just want to say that you happen to be very religious.
Yes.
I am not.
Right.
But my God is just as loving and it's absolutely spiritual. Mine's like energy and you know, all
your
the things
higher
that,
power is whatever you choose it to be.
Right.
And I love
you
that.
Can say universe.
Yeah.
I say spirit. Sometimes I say universe sometimes, you know,
there's
and I
Gus.
Just,
yeah.
Gus,
great universal spirit or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, I didn't know about Gus.
Gus is cool.
I don't like Gus though.
I know.
I mean, I don't like that word. I'm not going to use Gus.
Yeah.
I don't like that name.
Yeah.
Anyway, poor Gus.
Poor Gus. But it's one of those things that it's like whatever you choose to have a higher power, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
It's just that there is one.
I just like to put that out there. And because it's such a misconception.
It is.
And it drives people away. And mm-hmm. this is such a helpful place.
Yeah,
and
it is.
It teaches you these tools that, like, I know people who are non-alcoholics, successful multi-millionaires, like, quite frankly, could be billionaire, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Who have said to me, you know, my daughter's an alcoholic and I decided to do the steps and read the big book because I wanted to understand what she was going through. And they're like, and it's helped me in business.
Yes.
It helped me like level up. It helped me do this. And I'm like, I tell people, I say, you know, that is so cool. That
it's so cool.
And they're based on like old stoic stuff.
Absolutely.
And Christian stuff and just a whole bunch of things.
Right.
So anyway,
but the premise is this, you know, the premise is the same. And it's funny because you read it and it's got some old timey, you know, old timey language and, you know, but it works and it's proven and it's free. So, you know,
and no expectations,
none. And I do believe that my higher power saved me not once, but twice mm-hmm. that time. And it was through the program that I saw that God was redirecting me, that God was not done with me yet. He's like, no kid, you're not going out this way.
Yeah.
Come on. I got big plans for you. And that is just the most wonderful feeling in the world to mm-hmm. know that I don't do this alone ever. Mm-hmm. And I did everything alone mm-hmm. for my whole life. And I don't do anything alone now. I ask for help about everything.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's made me a better person. It's made me a better sister, better daughter, better godmother, better aunt, better professional. I mean, like, you know, to be able to have uncomfortable conversations in business, right? Like, where it's like, I read somewhere that it says, you know, the measure of success is based on how many uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have.
Oh, I have a million.
And I'm like, oh, I have uncomfortable conversations all the time. And why? It's because that's what we do.
Sometimes, like, my boss is like, you're so annoying, but I love you so much. And I'm like, well, the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Yeah.
And I will continue to be annoying because that's what gets my clients what they need.
Yes.
And
right.
It's what works.
It's what works.
Right? Yeah.
And that's the only way I know how to
do it. We got to ask for help. We got to say what we need. We've got to communication.
Exactly.
And it's been like a perspective change
for me.
It has. You know, it's like, and they talk about that in the big book. They talk about the psychic change.
Yes.
And I love that, the psychic change, because I needed that and I got that.
I got that too.
Yeah.
I got that too. And my life right now is so full. It's abundantly full of beautiful things and people and places. And, you know, I go to my home group. I go to some other meetings. I have a new sponsor. I've been, talk to my sponsor. I've got sponsees. You know, I've
you
I
go do to all church. The do.
I do the do. But I do it in a different way now. It's just like this feeling inside of me of like, yeah, let's go. Like it's for a different reason. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of times I was like, do because it was all selfish. Mm-hmm. Right. It was like, how can this make me look like I look like X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Now it's like, I really don't care. Like, I'm just doing these things to A, stay sober, B, help other alcoholics, and C, be a better person.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, my, you know, I have a very dear friend, George. We go to church almost every Sunday. That's been a part of my, part of my journey, because again, we have a pastor that's very open about addiction and mental health and so that to me is, it aids my faith in my higher power, but that's just, again, that's my path.
Yeah.
You know, I spend time with my family. I'm actually starting a new job in a week. So
that's I know a little bit.
I'm excited to say that I am joining the Hanley Foundation.
I've heard, and my coach actually went to Hanley, and he's
amazing.
A big advocate for Hanley. And I've heard such amazing things about that.
I'm so excited.
That place, that treatment center, and its foundation, just like Karen. And I love that.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
I'm really excited. Thank you. I always said
they've helped so many people. Like, they are one of the top places to go for sure.
I really felt that energy from the team there. And, you know, I always said that if there was ever kind of a dream job, if you will, that it would be getting to use my skills in event planning and marketing and PR and, you know, all the stuff, development, to raise money for people to be free.
Yeah. I love that.
To join us on this road.
Our guest yesterday, it works also, and I'll tell you his name and everything.
Wonderful.
And you should guys have to meet, you may know him, but, that's so cool. I'm so happy for you.
Thank
so, you know, what do you think is like the most important thing to put out there to say like you're doing that you think works for others?
I think for me, the biggest thing that I do now that I didn't do is talk about it and talk to people and to be open and to really say when I'm having a bad day, I actually say I'm having a bad day.
Yeah, or I'm struggling.
I'm struggling. And this year in particular has been a very difficult year for me for a number of reasons. And I feel that the only way I made it through was because I talked about it.
Yeah.
And because I shared with people openly at meetings and, you know, in my life to say, like, I am struggling. This is hard.
Yeah.
Like,
same.
It is hard. Like,
this year has been a
hard
year. And you're not the only person to say it. There's about 10 people this week that I've spoken to that are like, this was a really hard year. It was, and I'm talking about like 23 into 24.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
Like,
it was,
I always think
hard.
Of a year as like a school year rather than like a year year.
Same.
Still. And
forever
I'm like 20 years out of school.
Yeah.
But, But it was hard for me too. And I mean, there were days I once said, I was crying on my porch and I was like, I feel like I'm in early sobriety. Like, because yeah. I'm also getting to a point where I'm a woman and I have hormonal changes. Sure. Right?
Same girl.
And I'm just like, is there an exorcist in this body? Right. What's happening?
What is going on? Yeah,
what is this? Yeah. This headache feels like an alien is like living in my brain.
Yes.
You know?
Yes to all of it.
It's so bizarre, but and that's why it's so cool.
Right.
Right? Because we just shared.
We
and
just
it's
shared
like,
that.
It cuts it in half.
Right.
And it makes it less powerful.
Yep.
And it makes it like, oh my God. Not that I want you to also be in pain.
Right.
But it's like someone gets it.
Right. And guess what? When I am in pain, who am I going to call? You.
Yeah.
Because you know. Because you know what I'm dealing with.
Right.
How powerful is that?
Right.
How tremendous is that? That we have somebody somewhere that can hear what we have to say and say, you know what? Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only person that thought that. I was the only person that did that.
Totally. And that's what opened my mind in treatment was hearing other people say like, you know, one of the things that I used to be like, nobody feels this way was with my eating disorder. I used to feel guilty when I was hungry.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, who feels guilty when they're hungry? It's a bodily function, right? It's a bodily thing. And I felt that way my whole life. And someone said it. And I was like, me too.
Eureka.
Eureka. You know, and right. I was like, this is unbelievable. Like someone understands and knows it's the most ridiculous thought, but right. It's real. I have it.
But it's real.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's there. That's so cool. I love that. Yes, I agree. Communication, talking to people.
Yeah.
And not being afraid about it.
No.
And that can be tough sometimes.
It's hard. It took me a long time to be so free with the way. I mean, if you would have told me, if there was like a magic eight ball that said, Katie's going to be living a sober life mm-hmm. in South Florida, mm-hmm. going to be the happiest she's ever been. And she's going to be on a podcast talking about
how great life is,
how great life is and how hard her life was. And like being very open and honest about that. I would have been like, what?
Or saying I'm an alcoholic.
Right. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I know.
There are plenty. There are plenty.
But also saying that and knowing like I'm an alcoholic in recovery.
Yes.
And it's funny because like I'll tell a non-alcoholic like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. They're like, but you're not anymore. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Right.
You know, and I do think wording is important. And I do think that what we tell ourselves is important.
Definitely.
And you know, recently I figured out that something I say to myself, which is really bad, and I'm working on it, is like when I have a headache or when I'm not feeling good or when I don't have energy when I come home and I want to like get into bed, I'm right. like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And I constantly ask myself, what's wrong with me?
Right.
And it's like, there's nothing wrong with me. No. It's that I'm tired.
You're tired.
Yeah.
Your body needs rest. Your mind needs rest.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like overstimulated constantly. Yeah. I just want to shut down and that's okay.
Yeah. It's
okay. And this question persists. This is like currently what I feel like every few months I'm working on something specifically.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's why I do
therapy.
That's what
we need to do.
And that's why I still continue to do work. But this current work that I'm doing right at this moment in time is the working on the how I talk to myself. Because mm-hmm. I worked on this before, but now how I talk to myself, like the what's wrong with me.
Right, right.
You know, you have a headache. Drink some water. You're dehydrated. There's nothing wrong with you.
There's
you know what I mean?
You. Yeah, you're human.
Right.
And I laugh because it's the same thing. I do the exact same thing. Like I was sick this past weekend. You know, we had a big event last week and I ended up getting bronchitis and like all these other things. And
normally I would say you're not allowed in my house,
I know.
Even with a sniffle. Like I'm one of those people.
But I've been on antibiotics and all
that's
that
why
stuff.
You're so like, I've been on antibiotics for 2 days. I'm like, you're allowed.
But I was mad at myself for getting sick.
Right.
Like, I'm like, how could you get sick? It's Memorial Day weekend. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, what? No, you're sick. And
your body.
I was sleeping and I was mad at myself. Oh, you slept again. I can't believe you're so lazy. It's like, no.
You're sick.
You're sick. So it's like talking back to that voice what I'm finding is helpful for me to be like, zip it.
Right. Sometimes I talk back to that voice out loud and I'm like, oh, okay. I look like a crazy person, you know.
It's only Beatrice and Bentley that know that we
right,
do that.
Right. But, you know, sometimes it's important to talk back to that voice and mm-hmm. to say, like, hey, no, like, there's nothing wrong with you. Hey, no, like, my body's saying I need rest.
Yes.
I have bronchitis. Right. Like, right. I'm majorly sick. I'm on antibiotics. Right. My body needs to sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's so cool to have shifted our mindset to know and have the awareness to be like, that's not the right messaging.
That's not it.
Yeah. You know,
that's not going
to
work.
And would I talk to a 12-year-old girl that way?
Absolutely.
Would I tell an 11-year-old girl who's sick, don't rest?
Right.
That's ridiculous.
Would you tell me not to rest?
No.
Right? No,
right.
You wouldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
That's the things we say to ourselves.
I literally was going to say to you, sleep, 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 right. You know?
We're mean to ourselves.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm getting better. We're getting better.
Every year I get better. And I'm at 8 years now, or jeez, it'll be 8 years. And there's still constant work. And there's still my new thing is like, I'm riding a wave, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's high tide and sometimes mm-hmm. it's low tide. And I just got to stay in that water
that's
and ride
right.
the wave.
Ride the wave.
And like, just go with the flow of the wave.
Yep.
Just, it's going to pass. And saying to myself when things are bad, when I'm having that bad day or sometimes bad week,
sure.
and I say to myself, like, this is temporary.
Yes.
This feeling is temporary, because sometimes I get sick or I don't feel good. I'm like, is this going to be the way I feel forever?
This is it. This is how I'm going out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, no, there's hope.
There is. And by the way, that is a tremendous way to like end the podcast, is that there is hope.
Yeah.
Because there is hope.
You know? Oh, my God.
Like, that is the message that we want. Like, there is hope.
I was sleeping in my car.
Like
there
me,
is hope.
There is hope.
Yeah.
There is always hope.
And what's so cool is like in this AA community, and I'm not in a lot of the podcasts, I don't, you know, I say 12-step program. I try not to promote one program, but
right.
that is the program that I am a part of.
Right.
And in this, I should say 12-step community.
Yes.
This is more than just that one. I have found that when I started from scratch again, zero scratch, and I know you did too. Yep. You know, I had one of those remedial jobs
yeah.
where I was answering the phone and booking stuff for a massage yeah. company, like, you know, and I was like, I should be doing, I was a real estate agent. I was doing
right.
this. I was doing that. I mean, not that I was actually an assistant to a real estate agent, but I was successful. I was making money.
Right.
I was the one that was like paying the DJ's rent because
yes.
I wanted to continue the party
right.
or paying
yep.
the Comcast bill, you
yes.
know, because I wanted the internet so I can like email my boss the listings or something.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, how am I doing this? I was making so much money and now I'm like living on peanuts, looking at everything in the supermarket and saying like, what can I eat this week? What's
yes.
on BOGO? What's this?
Oh,
and you know, I've come a long way, but that's with help of the community.
Exactly.
Hey, this person has a job available.
Yes.
Hey, like, and I've watched people, homeless people, come into meetings and now be successful
yes.
in construction and have.
Yes.
And so that is what's so incredible, is that like, if you just make the little bit of effort.
Yep. The willingness.
And just, it's yep. hard.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
So hard to take
when
that
you're
first
in a dark
step.
Place
yep.
to like, let that door open a little
yep.
so the light can peek through. But,
yep.
but I mean, just try it.
Just try it.
Just try it.
Just let.
If your way is not, you know, how's that? It's kind of like that question that they would ask us
yeah.
in treatment, and how's that working out for
right,
you?
Right. How's that working out for
and
you?
And I was
yeah.
like, it's yeah. not working out too good, actually.
And I think what for me was it was that I allowed people to love me until I could love myself.
I love that.
And so the women in the room circled around me. You're a huge part of that. You know, our group of friends.
Who I love so much. We need to do brunch, actually.
I know we do. And yeah, by the way, we do brunch. Like, we do brunch and have fun.
Without alcohol.
Without booze. Like,
I do everything without alcohol. I went to the south of France and partied with friends who were drinking, who were doing other stuff.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, you do you.
You do you.
And I'm going to tap into that old me and get my party shoes
uh-huh.
on. And because now I go to bed at 9:30.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but I tapped into that old me on vacation
yeah.
and I danced and I had fun and I was out with them and I didn't miss it.
No.
But it took me a few years to get there.
Yeah, it took a while.
You know, it took me a while to get there. But it's worth the wait.
It's worth the wait. It sure is.
That whole like struggling in the beginning is what makes me not want to relapse. Right. Because there are thoughts.
That resilience.
And there is times where I'm like, that looks good.
Right.
Right. But I know that I worked so hard for this that I am not messing this up.
No way.
You know, mentally, physically, work-wise. Like, I've worked hard.
Yes, you have.
You know, and yes, it's funny. Have. My coach turned around and goes, and that's humility.
Right.
Having worked hard and saying, like, I know I've worked hard.
Yes.
And, you know, let me show you how to do it. Let me help you.
Let me help you. Let me help you. Just take my hand.
Yeah.
You know, I read something that a friend of mine just recently wrote today about someone that was lost by this, you know, fell to this disease. And he said, I extend my hand and my heart to you whenever you're ready.
I love that.
And I'm like, there is nothing more powerful than knowing that there is a group of people that extend their hands and their hearts
genuinely,
Right. And the door is always open. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think that I was looking for my whole life.
Yeah.
Was to find people like this that I could be myself around.
Oh yeah.
And that would allow me to thrive. Because the love and support of my family and friends just has lifted me up.
Yeah.
And I'm so just grateful and so grateful to you.
Oh my God, stop saying that.
So grateful. I am. I'm so grateful.
I love you. I'm grateful to you. It's like, a two-way street.
It's a beautiful thing that we have. And I pinch myself every day when I wake up in South Florida, excuse me, with my dog, Bentley, Bougie Bentley, who can't do the whole podcast without talking about Bentley.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's in ACOA. So,
Beatrice is a full alcoholic.
Yeah.
She's a full food addict, alcoholic. So I love that. And is there anything you feel like you need to share that you have not? And then I have another question.
Oh, I think I pretty much put it all out there.
Okay. And thank you for doing that. Thank you for sharing your story.
Of course.
Thank you for being here. If you could ask your younger self, or not ask, I keep saying that. And I don't know where my mind is. If you could tell your younger self something, maybe you should be asking your younger self something.
Yeah.
If you could tell your younger self something, how old would that self be? Like, what do you picture in your mind when you ask that question? And what would you ask?
I would be 8 years old.
Mm. Or what would you say? God, ask again.
I would say, you're going to be okay. Just let it go.
Right.
Just let it go. Even at that age, I was holding on to everything. And I think that that's when it started, that I was holding on to everybody's everything, including my own. You know, it was just, I put the weight of the world on my shoulders and I didn't need to.
Right. Not your responsibility.
Not my responsibility. So I think just saying, let it go. It's going to be okay. You can do this.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
You're incredible.
You.
Thank you.
You're incredible.
Thank you.
Mutual Admiration Society.
I know. Absolutely. I love women, lifting women. I love interviewing women. I also love interviewing men, of course. But there's this camaraderie, I think, in this community. And I have this very successful woman who's going to be on the podcast in the fall. She's going to come down to South Florida to do it. And she told me, she's like, you know, I love Corey. Corey's a good friend of hers.
Yeah.
But she said, I want to do it with you because I want to show other women that women should be lifting women rather than tearing each other down. I want another woman to be successful. Good. Let's do it.
There's room for all of us.
Way more than enough room.
And you know what? It is. I absolutely love there is one of my favorite humans on this planet is a girl that I work with, and she has become so much more than that to me. She's, you know, I call her my mini me. She's brilliant and funny and, you know, capable and talented and all the things. And I want to lift her up at every juncture. And she's like, you're like my hype woman. And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Every woman needs another woman to be their hype woman.
We should always be a woman's yes. hype woman.
Yes.
I agree.
And I want I'm to be able that. To teach her that, you know, like there's enough room for all of us. We can all help each other and be successful and do it together. And let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do some good.
Yeah,
in this
let's
world.
Go. I love it. Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're the best. Let's hug.
Yes, let's hug it out.